stop? Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
It is Friday night. I'm Dave. This is the Hour of Truth, and we're glad to be here. It's 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. On with the State Sovereignty Series. We're going to have a drop-in visit from Lloyd Sloan here in a bit. He's been up to the Capitol to talk to some legislators about his state repeal amendment. We had quite a nice show with Lloyd last week. You want to go back and catch that if you can, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the MGC radio button, click on the Hour of Truth, and go find the segment we had with Lloyd about the state repeal amendment. About 2 hours we talked about that, and it's a good deal. One of the three that I think has to come out of these convention of the states that is about to happen. Does anything in the news surprise you anymore? Anything? Christopher Kit Bond is now going to lobby the state Missouri legislators, the Republicans, who've been opposed so far to the expansion of Medicaid. He's going to convince them all that expanding Medicaid at great cost to you and me is a good deal. Politics makes for strange bedfellows, doesn't it? This is insanity gone wild. It's one of the reasons that we've absolutely got to get this convention of the states going. Absolutely one reason why the three important amendments that have got to come out of this convention of the states is a repeal of the 17th Amendment, the state repeal amendment, and a repeal of the 16th Amendment, and in the same amendment, an institution of the fair tax. We've done a whole show now with Lloyd on the state repeal amendment. We'll be doing entire two-hour segments on the repeal of 16 and the fair tax, and we'll do a separate two-hour segment on the repeal of 17. So we'll be dealing with those things in depth and independently as the three primary and most important amendments that need to come out of the convention of the states. Ran across, thanks to a friend, an interesting little bit of InfoWars propaganda today that detailed the four reasons we do not want to do a Article 5 Amendment Convention of the States. I'm going to be doing entire episodes on each of those four items. We'll try to get Keith Carmichael back here for those. It was interesting, but it's the standard garbage. It's, the liberals own us and have us painted into a sit, stay, beg corner where they own everything, and we don't want to take them on in hand-to-hand combat over the liberties that our founders gave us that they are taking away from us. There just isn't anyone left alive who has the brains to take these people on, basically. And so we'll just roll over and play dead. That was the first of it. I had that here a minute ago, and I can't remember the other three right off the top of my head, but I'll get them up before we return from the next break, and we'll deal with them in summary. But I am going to spend a entire show in the near future on each one of these four arguments, because they're all weak, they're all based in fear, they are all, and I'm going to tell you right now, they are all originated and fueled by the progressives who want to try to keep this thing from happening. Here they are. His second reason was that they don't currently follow the Constitution now, so what makes them think they would, what makes us think that they would follow the Constitution when it's amended? Well, that's the entire idea, is to take the power away from Washington, D.C., to include the Supreme Court on whether or not to follow the Constitution, on what to decide. And with the three amendments that I've outlined, Washington, D.C. will be powerless to make those decisions, whether there's conservatives up there or liberals. You know, the guy in his second point goes on to intimate that it would be much, much, much better if conservatives were in charge up there because they could then violate the Constitution. He says, you know, these Democrats, they lie, they cheat, they steal. How can you trust a Democrat who votes against, who fights against voter ID laws, who fights against abortion, banning abortion, who fights against the definition of marriage as a straight thing, who tries to push, well, the intimation here is that if only we were in charge, you know, we could ban these abortions. We could violate the Constitution then in our way. The whole idea is to take the power to make that decision away from Washington, D.C. and send it back down to where it truly belongs. And that's And the truly belongs things is another thing that really grates on conservative / anarchists. And I'm telling you, today's conservative is an anarchist. Today's conservative basically says, well, it isn't a function of the government. And that's a word you hear a lot, a function, proper function of government. I hear that word phrase thrown around, proper function of government. This is a proper function of government. That's not a proper function of government. It's a proper function of government to tell people they can't have abortions. It's not a proper function of government to tell people they can't have abortions. It's a proper function of government to tell people that only straight people can be married. It's not a proper function of government to tell people that gay people can be married. It's a proper function of government. And basically, all a conservative is telling you when they say this is exactly the same thing a liberal is telling you. The government is here to do what I say it's here to do. And then you get, you of course get the old, these are my God-given rights. I have a God-given right to do this. Now, I've not found yet a conservative who can quote me the scripture in you take, pick your version, the King James Version, the I Eat a Potato Version, the New Standard English Version. You find me a version where there is a scripture that says, God commanded you to have a gun. God gave you the right to a gun. You know, according to the founders, be they right or be they wrong, when they wrote the Declaration of Independence, there are some rights granted by, and in an edit to the Declaration of Independence originally written, drafted, they inserted by their creator. Nature's God was the original intended wording. And through several drafts, that became endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, and among them is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. A gun wasn't involved anywhere in life, liberty, or the pursuit of happiness. But our founders did, in fact, believe in guns. That doesn't detract from that. They did, in fact, believe in your right to defend yourself. We don't detract from that. They did, in fact, believe, and so stated in the Second Amendment, that it is not within the power of the federal government to disarm you. We don't detract from that. But once you get past life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, you've got this group of people who say anything and everything that I say is a God-given right. Well, in the first place, it ain't. And in the second place, we don't rule the land because the Bible told me so. You know, I have a right to pick my nose because the Bible tells me so. I have a right to sit in my front yard naked because the Bible tells me so. I have a right to smoke some dope because the Bible tells me so. Now, sorry, we don't rule our land because the Bible told me so. And then we get into this, something is or isn't constitutional. And that is a little bit more concrete. That is something that's a little bit more definitive, and that is something that we're going to spend the last half of the show on tonight. Right now, I think we're going to talk to Lloyd. Hey, it's Dave. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Lloyd Sloan. Yeah,
it's Lloyd T. Sloan, my buddy.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Very good, actually. You know, it's cold, but I'm doing pretty good. I'm optimistic. Figured I'd call you up, give you an update. I spent the day in Jeff City, on Wednesday, and was going around talking to legislators about the state repeal amendment idea, basically, and the approach that I would like to see on it. So it was very productive and interesting, and that's the bottom line is. There's clearly a general recognition that we got to do something about the Constitution. At least with the legislators that I spoke with, you know, they recognize the role of the states here is important, and that's all good news. And then we get into the specifics of, you know, this proposal versus other proposals. But I think, you know, sitting on our hands anymore, ignoring this problem, that's not an answer. So, you know, as critical as people may be of one approach or another, you better have some ideas yourself, period.
I agree. Just as a refresher, the state repeal amendment, the amendment that Lloyd has been championing for years. Lloyd and I first talked about this almost 3 years ago now, and it is an amendment that needs to be made to the United States Constitution. It would have to be approved by the 28 states to become part of the Constitution, but it would basically say that a majority of the states that represent a majority of the people can repeal any federal act, law, or regulation, whether that act, law, or regulation be enacted by the legislature or by an administrative body, and I'll go on to say even an executive order. And when 26 states that represent a majority of the American people say that's no longer a law, voila, as of the next morning, it's no longer a law. So, and Lloyd is of the opinion that, I'm of the opinion that this is one of the three most important amendments that have to come out of a convention of the states. Lloyd is of the opinion that we needn't wait for the convention of the states. He's working the Missouri State Legislature, if you listen to our show, to adopt a resolution to forward to the United States Congress that says, we're getting the states together and we want this done, and then we're going to work with other states, once Missouri forwards this to Washington, D.C., to get more and more states on that wagon. And Lloyd, as he said, spent a day in Jeff City talking to legislators on your behalf to make this thing happen in the state of Missouri. And you're optimistic, Lloyd, that in probably not this session, but in a long haul, we can get this done?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, I definitely, on the long haul, I don't know how much time we've got, but I think, yeah, it's not going to be that the legislature in Missouri just keeps ignoring this stuff. No, they're going to pass something. They've already sent somebody to the Convention of States.
Right.
I think Representative Mike Moon is his name. And so we're taking a part in this. We're going slowly and steadily down this, obviously. And I think we're going to do something. And, you know, it doesn't have to be just one thing. You can try several approaches. There's a discussion. Yeah, so I'm optimistic about all that. And the American people are waking up to this. You know, the book I'm working on, that's what I titled it, was Constitutional Awakening. And that's clearly a deliberate title. That's what I also believe we need. We need the average American to start thinking about their Constitution again and take it seriously as an issue. No doubt about it. And that's going to happen. It's happening now. I think Obamacare woke people up. I actually think, strangely enough, John Roberts, I don't know if this was his intent, but it will, you know, as a consequence of the way that he particularly ruled in Obamacare, where so many Republicans particularly thought, well, this thing's blatantly unconstitutional. And so Roberts comes in and says, well, you know, it looks like it's under their taxing powers to me, so I guess they can do it. But I think we are so used to putting all our eggs in that Supreme Court basket, and that's a mistake. I hope people now see that's a very serious mistake. We need to take responsibility for it, and we need to do it at elections, and we need to do it at state levels. All that
right.
is true. You know, welcome to America, people. This was the system the founders gave us in the first place. We're the ones that corrupted it and acted like, well, that's the Supreme Court's job. We don't have to do it. Nonsense. It's your Constitution. Of course you have to do it. So all this is true. Yeah, that's on the specifics of the issue, I'll get back to that. I'm with you, obviously. We are total like mind. There's only two or three really important enough things that I think need to be amended, and this is one of them, and to me it is the most important one. And it's an idea
right.
from James Madison. I mean, this idea can be traced back to James Madison. The basic flaw is exactly what we've been talking about. You can't let the federal government police itself. You can't let them decide whether or not the law they just passed breaks the Constitution or not. You know, that clearly is flawed. And we need states to be able to do that and to be able to push back, and we don't have that mechanism. I think a lot of people recognize that the 17th Amendment, which allowed for a direct election of senators, so now people, we vote on the senators ourselves, it used to be the states who picked the senators. And when you remove that last check, it wasn't much of a check in my opinion, but it was the last one that the states actually had, and you took it away, and now there's just nothing from the states have no way to defend their own powers against the powers delegated to the feds. And they need that check back, and frankly, they need an even better one, I believe, than was taken away in the 17th. I think it has to be even stronger than that. Which is why I so advocate state repeal. But
you're absolutely.
Go ahead. Well, these are the discussions that we need to have. We must start thinking about the Constitution in this way. We must start focusing on amendments. I don't want to get distracted into whether or not an amendment convention is a good idea or a bad idea. Let's just talk about the amendments themselves.
That's right.
What is it that we think will fix this problem?
And I'm on your side. I don't consider it a distraction at all, and I'm perfectly capable of fighting this battle on both fronts. I'm with you in needing to. I mean, if we can do this in and around and in spite of or in the absence of a convention of the states, let's do it. You know, we need to. If nothing else, we need to start working this thing in Jefferson City and out to the other states. And as you noted in the session that you and I spent together, I mean, get 6, 7, get 9 states to forward a resolution like this to Washington, D.C., and bam, you're going to wake up some people in Washington, D.C. right away.
I agree. You know, and let them talk about it and give some feedback back. I mean, this is not a bad approach. It's safe. We're not actually proposing an amendment. We're not doing that. We're just petitioning them and saying, here's an amendment. We think it's a good idea. And incidentally, here's 35 other states that agree with us. Okay.
Yeah.
Think it's a good idea, too.
Because the tradition.
You might want to propose this. Yeah.
Because
you might want to do something along these lines.
Because,
I mean,
folks, we've been. Please.
Well, when you talk about the amendment convention, it has two advantages. So I want to state specifically, there's a reason why the founders put that there. And conventions, and in particularly a convention of states, as they're calling it, an amendment convention, would have two advantages to me. The first is it's a way to get around Congress. And if we get to the point where Congress just is absolutely the problem and it's intractable, and for whatever reason we can't seem to elect these jerks out of there, I mean, which, you know, I don't understand that either, but let's take that as a given. The thing is just so corrupted. We need a way around them. Then a convention of states is a way around them. So that's good. We need that. And two, a convention by its nature is a compromise process. So rather than us, I mean, I'm Harvard educated, and I know they're arrogant, but, you know, I'm not so arrogant as to think that I alone can come up with the right amendment language. Oh, that's a fool who thinks that they alone can come up with the right language. No, I mean, I'll make a case for what I'm doing, but I think a convention can get a lot of bright people together, including Democrats, frankly. I would not exclude Democrats and the so-called enemy from this process. You need to include them because you need a constitution that is a compromise and that meets a lot of different needs, and we all kind of recognize we got a problem and let's work to fix it. Now, obviously, if you got a Democrat or a Republican who's happy with the way it is now, they need not attend, okay?
Right.
You know, I don't need you guys there to come up with amendment ideas. I mean, I'm not exactly going to invite Jeff Davis to come up with an amendment to abolish slavery, am I? Okay, so that part's obvious. And, I mean, the people who like the system the way it is don't need to show up to this thing. But those of us who are uncomfortable with the way it is, and that includes both left and right. It's both Republicans and Democrats that aren't happy with the current situation. Believe it or not, I read both sides, okay? And there's a lot of people that are nervous about where we're at now. Get them all together and put the best and brightest, whatever, you know, into there. Come up with the best language, the top 3 or 4 proposals that we can come up with. That's a good, healthy process. That could actually be better than anything we'll ever come up with, and then involve the American people in a ratification process. You know what I go back and remember? I use this example, too, the Equal Rights Amendment. I presume we're both old enough to remember the absolute war that took place in this country over the Equal Rights Amendment. I mean, Phyllis Schlafly is known for that war, okay? If there had been no Equal Rights Amendment, you'd have never heard of Phyllis Schlafly. She is the woman who killed it, period, and she cut her teeth on it, and that is her claim to fame, in my opinion. But more than that, the Equal Rights Amendment is the basis. It's what galvanized the feminist movement in this country. Now, that's a very successful movement. To this day, they got some serious power, in my opinion, and they still influence tons of laws and the whole attitude of the country. was transformed, and they used that Equal Rights Amendment to gain that political movement, to organize it, to work around it, and to focus it. We can use something like State Repeal Amendment for the same purpose. We can force the bad guys to talk about the Constitution, because we can put that amendment right in front of them and say yes or no. Do you like this idea? What's wrong with this idea? That actually focuses your movement, and it can tell you. The American people have a lot of trouble telling the good guys from the bad guys, that's for sure. They're trying to do it based on party labels of donkey versus elephant. That is not necessarily the best way to do it, okay? And it seems fairly obvious to me. You need a better way, a constitutional amendment that we can all kind of get behind and say that's a great idea. Boy, that would do a whole lot to push this, to push our agenda and to galvanize our movement. Okay, end of sermon.
No, that's perfect. I like the idea that you brought up of actually just getting a state resolution, getting this thing out there, and maybe get 8 or 9 other states out there. In the first place, there is nothing at all wrong with this methodology. It is, in fact, if you'll remember, because, and it's easy for the listeners to forget, because we've been on this state sovereignty / Article 5 thing for almost a year now, it's easy to forget that what Lloyd proposes here, us sending a request to the United States Congress and Senate for an amendment, is the traditional method for amending the Constitution. You know, the only way that, except for the first 10, that the Constitution has ever been amended in the past, listeners, is by the United States legislature proposing an amendment and sending it out to the states. We've never done this Convention of the States things before, so there's nothing new or I don't want to say exciting. There's nothing new at all about what Lloyd is proposing here. It certainly is exciting.
It's in our tradition. It's very much a part of it. There's nothing that should threaten anyone. There's, you know, the boogeyman is not lying behind this, for sure. This is the way we've always done it, frankly.
But the other thing that strikes me as great about this methodology is that you start the debate, you start the discussion before the amendment actually is officially proposed. You get the discussion started, because, you know, as great a document as the Constitution is, and as much a product of statesmanship as it is, the founding principles of this country don't come from a reading of three written pages. It comes from reading the discussions that went into the ratification process of the Constitution. In my mind, the statesmanship is in the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers, where people said the debate was on, the discussion was on.
The debate is
you
on.
Know,
yeah.
And this thing that we're in the middle of now, I mean, if you folks will go study the Federalists and Anti-Federalists, you will find that as great as the Federalist Papers are, and they've turned out to be the document that we fall back on for the founders' thinking, the Anti-Federalist Papers are the ones that told you, one day, brothers and sisters, you're going to wake up where you are in 2014. You give this power to a centralized government. Read the anti. You can go to Barnes & Noble, and for $4, you can buy a paperback book that is nothing but the bound Anti-Federalist Papers. And you will hear statesman after statesman after statesman tell you, by the year 2014, here's what you're going to be looking at.
Now,
am I
I'm
right?
With you. I think, no, I'm totally with you. I think, you know, I don't. That debate is generally by historians considered the greatest debate in American history.
Absolutely.
The question of whether or not to ratify the Constitution. And it was carried on by the American people for the most part, you know,
yes.
in newspapers, in dialogues, in taverns, in their lives. They needed to decide, how are we going to structure this union? And
mm-hmm.
do we have a strong enough federal government or not? And is this proposal the one we want, et cetera, et cetera? And it's a massive debate. And just the attention and the focus on fundamental principles of government that exist
yes.
in those Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers and all the conventions, all the ratifying conventions, too. You read those debates there. They make you proud to be an American, man.
Yeah.
Let me quote you from Federalist Number 1, because what you said really triggered what I think is a great quote from Alexander Hamilton, and it's right there in Federalist Number 1. So he says, "It seems to have been reserved to the people of this country, by their conduct and example, to decide the important question, whether societies of men are really capable or not of establishing good government from reflection and choice, or whether they are forever destined to depend for their political constitutions on accident and force."
Absolutely.
Man,
the opening phrases, right.
It's very 18th century, okay? It's hard
yes.
to quote it because it's like you almost have to read it. You can't naturally quote it. But there's Hamilton basically saying, America, you are in an enviable position and also unique on the planet, frankly. Nobody
yes.
else has done what you're doing. You are sitting down and consciously creating a government for yourselves peacefully.
Yep.
That's an incredible accomplishment. Do not undersell that accomplishment, because I guarantee you the vast majority of governments that ever existed on Earth came because somebody conquered them, okay?
That's right.
And that's why they're there. And if we don't want that kind of government, we need to sit down again and have – we would probably in a period – this is a fascinating period of American history to me. We may be closer to the founders in this respect than we have been in many other ways. Because we now face, I believe, constitutional crisis. We need this awakening. We need to do as Hamilton and those guys did, really decide what is going to be our fundamental supreme law of the land and
right.
fix it. I mean, with amendments. I'm not advocating rewriting the Constitution, so people are going to misunderstand me. But we need to go through this process again of fixing this thing big time. And getting this back to the original federalism that we have so chucked and thrown out. Yeah.
And another thing that you pointed out in your initial dissertation that I wanted to go back to is this, what's going to come out of this debate is exactly the same thing that came out of the debate of a bunch of men, statesmen all, who met in Philadelphia, some from states where there was slavery, some from states where there was no slavery, some from states where there was a state church, some from states where there was complete liberty of conscience, some from states where there was, that were trade heavy, some from states that were agriculture heavy. And the, we talk about later in American history about the Great Compromise. The Constitution of the United States, brothers and sisters, was the Great Compromise. We keep hearing the fear-mongering about a getting together of the states as though liberals aren't part of this country. They are. Now I don't want to sound like John Boehner, because the reason the word compromise has become a dirty word is because for conservatives, for people who love liberty, for too many years, compromise has meant capitulation. Those two words have been synonymous, and I'm not suggesting that we capitulate on anything. In fact, as we've said many times, it's time to take the offense here. But do be prepared for the fact that all great works are works of great compromise. Am I right in your mind, Lloyd?
No, I think you are. There's a difference between, and we need to make a distinction, but I'm not asking people to compromise their principles, but I am saying you compromise on issues. And that's hard to do sometimes. Slavery makes a good example. The founders definitely compromised on slavery. They didn't, you know, but and they did it on a state basis. That's one of the other ways that Americans compromised, is we had a principle of federalism that we actually used to trump all the others, okay? And so, you know, even on things, you know, like slavery, we said, look, we ain't never going to agree even in principle on this one, okay? Period.
Right.
And, but we will give your state its way, and you will give our state its way, and that is how we will come together. And we can still do that again. We just need to get back to a rule where most things are done at state levels. And it's not necessarily a comfortable solution for people. There are nationalists out there, both on the pro-life and pro-choice side, for example, to use abortion as the issue. And that certainly is an issue of principle, arguably on both sides in some respects. And so, you know, you're trying to get a national rule for that, you may not be able to do it. So you go in
right.
with federalism and say, let's get rid of Roe v. Wade, let's put this back at state levels, and let's let the states work it out as best they can. That to me is a reasonable compromise. I realize I will get arguments from the extremists, in my opinion, on both sides of the issue, but the vast majority of Americans will say that's acceptable to us. Put it back to states. Missouri
right.
can have its laws. California can have its. People can decide. And we'll see. One of the advantages of federalism, people should not forget this, is that the side that's right typically proves itself right over time. So even though the founders compromised with slavery and they left it in the South, make no mistake, those southern states, those slave states, were falling behind the North.
They were
losing long-term, and they knew it. Okay, it was not as good a system. Get real, okay? We all know that. And
yep.
it was destined to die out. They were getting somewhat desperate. You know, I don't want to get into all the details of that,
right.
but, you know, and I realize, you know, debates still rage over the Civil War and what caused it. But for the most part, you know, I view it, I'm a Southern sympathizer, but I view it as the slave states were going to lose to the northern industrial states because the North has a superior system, and they're proving it. And if the southern slave system would have been superior, then, frankly, it would have outgrown the northern system, and it would have been, you know, more vibrant, more productive. It was not. It's a slave system, people. It's not going to be better than the North. And I truly believe that the pro-life states, I mean, I believe this in my heart, they will outperform the abortion states. If you get a fair playing field and let it play itself out, I believe that. So,
we got a caller we're going to get to after the break. Can you hang on through the break, Lloyd, in case this caller wants to talk to you?
Absolutely. I'm here
okay,
to talk.
Okay, we're going to take
right.
a quick break, and then we're going to get to our phone lines, and we'll be right back.
High noon everywhere you go, and the guilty feels.
There's a conflict in every human heart between the rational and the irrational, between good and evil. And good does not always triumph.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The greatest anti-federalist of them all right there, Mr. Patrick Henry, who refused to participate in the Constitutional Convention or have any part, argued adamantly in his state house against ratification of the United States Constitution, and exactly for the reason that we sit here today, for his knowledge of the fact that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And don't kid yourself, brothers and sisters, as God is our witness, when we fix this thing, there's going to be a generation 250 years from today saying we got to do this again, because no matter what kind of a structure you build, and this is the purest structure to date created by mankind, no matter what kind of man-made structure you build, it will wither and it will die, and if human beings are involved in it, it will corrupt. So in his infinite wisdom, George Mason stood up in a place Patrick Henry refused to go and said, I see this happening. I see this happening just exactly the way our good friend says it's going to happen, and let's install a way to fix it. And we'll install a way to fix it. Now you and I, 250 years later, will fix it, and you know and I know and God in heaven knows that 250 years from now, they're going to have to do it again. And that's all right. That's what democracy and a democratic republic is all about. Listen, Lloyd, our caller is Mr. Keith Carmichael, a good friend of mine, another good friend of mine, the director of the Missouri Coalition of the Convention, the Missouri Convention of the States Coalition. How you doing, Keith?
Hey, doing great. What a beautiful evening if you're inside.
Hey, yeah, meet Lloyd. You two haven't met in person, I take it.
I am inside, though, I will say. Very nice here, too. 70 degrees, it's beautiful.
So what you got for us tonight, Keith?
Oh, I just wanted to just call in, and there's so many parts of the story that our students don't learn in high school, and it's unfortunate many of us don't take an interest in history until we get up later in life, and we all regret that we weren't paying attention and we weren't focused when we had a chance to study American history. But unfortunately, in our curriculums, there's so many stories that have been skewed a little bit, and they're not told. You know, it's amazing when you talk about the framers, you talk about the three-fifths, talk about slavery. Those men worked adamantly, really, and not all of them, but to a large degree, to do what they could to abolish, and they couldn't because of the southern states. But when you talk about the three-fifths states, mode, there was that's told wrong nearly everywhere. And the story is that you read the letters that some of those men wrote back to their wives. Is maybe the only source sometimes that you have for some of the most interesting parts of that narrative. But they were doing what they could to put an end to slavery as soon as possible. And most people don't know. They talk about the three-fifths. You know, the folks from the South looked at their slaves as property. And what happened was the folks in the North said, well, if you're you know, they wanted those folks to vote, and they said, well, you know, if you're going to let your property vote, we're going to let our hogs and our chickens and our cows and our horses are all going to get to vote too. And so they argued back and forth, and you can see that. But rather than give all those folks opportunity to vote as a whole individual, they finally compromised on the three-fifths principle. But part of that compromise was to end the buying and selling of men and women, human beings, in 1800. January 1st, 1800 was going to be a really important date. Of course, as it got closer, that was manipulated. But they did what they could, I think, in, to a large degree, to end slavery. And we shouldn't forget that.
Well, we shouldn't, and there are some things that have to be remembered. Okay, I mean, we like to look back on history. Lloyd and I were discussing this at length just the other day, not on the air, but just one on one. You know, these people are. Let's don't make any bones about it. These people, North and South, alike. They didn't see black people as equals. Abraham Lincoln didn't see black people as equals. So let's not make these folks out to be holier than thou. But by the same token, those in the North, as a general rule, didn't think it right that human beings were being bought and sold. But as Lloyd pointed out, you know, if these folks who were being bought and sold in the South had been anything other than dark-skinned human beings, there would have been no slavery in this country if what was being bought and sold down there was Irish immigrants
They would never have accepted slavery of white people.
Escapees from Australian debtor prisons or something like that.
One thing that I didn't know is that slavery, to a degree, I'm told, started with servitude. And the servitude that was allowed early on in some of the colonies actually did have to do with white people. In other words, I'm told that some of the servitude that actually began, that were preludes to slavery in some areas, involved the servitude of white individuals. And so it didn't continue, and certainly later on it was got completely...
Yeah, I mean, what I would tell you, and I mean, you got to be very careful here, but I would say at no time were whites ever enslaved in the United States. It is
right,
true that they had what was called indentured servitude, which was found in the Bible, and that was a kind of seven-year period where you would indenture yourself to someone. That certainly existed. And when they first brought the blacks over, they may have had that in mind for them too. But obviously they're bringing them by force. Of course, a lot of people are in debt in Europe, and they're essentially being forced to do this as well. I mean, it's maybe a touchy subject there. What I'm saying is, and we need to be aware of this, they would never have enslaved white people as they did blacks. They definitely viewed blacks as inferior. That's part of the problem. It's part of the issues. And Jefferson is the exception. I mean, he probably believed blacks were inferior. In fact, he definitely did, because he says so in the Notes on the State of Virginia. But he absolutely insisted they have the same rights. It's the other key to understanding the founders. And even today, I mean, people are not equal. If you want to say, you know, are they all equally smart? No. Are they all equally beautiful? No. Are they all equally rich? No. Are they all equally thin? No. I am myself. I am well aware of that inequality, okay? So, you know, but they all have the same rights.
Right.
That's the principle that we need to get back on. In my opinion, the progressives and the socialists have focused more on equality of, if you will, outcome. You'll hear it phrased that way. That's not the founder's concept of equality. When Jefferson says, you know, all men are created equal, he doesn't mean all men are the same height, you know.
Right.
He doesn't mean they're all the same smarts. he goes on. He tells you what he means. They are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. And he goes on and lists some of those, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. He absolutely believes that the blacks have those same rights.
Right.
Period.
Everyone.
Regardless of how inferior he thinks they are, they have the same rights, period. Those rights absolutely deny slavery. So all that's true.
Right. Equality under the law, in the world of man-made law, everyone must be treated exactly the same. If a specific law if a specific act is a grand theft for a white man, it's a grand theft for a black man. If it's a grand theft for a man, it's a grand theft for a woman. If it's a grand theft for someone who has three legs, it's a grand theft for someone who only has one leg. Clearly, as Lloyd said, all men, you can't stop after the sentence, all men are created equal. Some people are born blind. Some people are born with no arms. Some people are born poor. Some people are born rich. Clearly, everyone is not created in the liberal sense of equal.
Hey, Dave.
Yes.
I know there's a really interesting book, and I encourage anybody who's looking into this more. David Barton has written a book called History of America in Black and White. And a lot of folks do not realize that in the early, there were times, and I say early, I'm saying much of the 1600s, there were folks who were black who were treated just like like brothers and sisters or whatever. They were treated as equals in many ways in the early colonies. I mean, there were black men who fought at Concord and Trenton and died. There were judges. There was one judge that served, as I remember, 9 terms as a judge. And so there was a period of time in which there were some really interesting stories of men. In fact, the city of Washington was laid out, or a large part of that is due to the intelligence, a very intelligent gentleman that Jefferson was aware of, and even, sent evidence to France, as I recall, of, these folks are not our underlings. They are not, they deserve respect as humans, and he brought that out and used one of those men as an example, as used as intelligence. So there was a period of time that I think that maybe that we can look back to and realize that as a different time, but then there were some changes that occurred, in a period of time there too. So we can certainly learn a lot from history of that period.
Yeah, and I do think that the modern liberal, although I don't usually call them that, I call them progressives. I think it's closer and more accurate.
Yes,
but,
yeah.
Your modern big government type, they never tire of pounding the founders, okay? And so they love to portray the founders as evil, wicked people, and they had slavery, et cetera. And so they leave out the part of the history where, in actuality, particularly in the northern states and in some places, blacks were treated pretty well, or at least, had rights and stuff, and you do find these stories. By the same token, we tend to leave out on our side, that we ignore the racial aspects here, and we just try and pretend that they didn't exist, and they did exist. They were real. And that's partly why it was so, that's why it was so difficult to end slavery.
Right.
There's a letter from Madison that's kind of humorous. Madison had a better sense of humor than Jefferson, and he says, I can solve slavery tomorrow. I just need to turn all the black people white.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah,
he understood the problem. The problem was the racism that was in both the North and the South. Frankly, it's not just in the South. It's both. There's elements of it everywhere, and they just are very uncomfortable living with different races. There's racism against the Indians. I mean, to some extent, it still exists in society today. We try and do what we can. We certainly insist on equality before the law. I mean, that's the starting place.
That's it,
absolutely,
right there.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the key that we think, you know, okay, that's good enough, right? And they might
it
say,
is.
No, it's still not good enough. But
it
to
is.
Trash the founders is just a gross misreading of history. I agree with that completely. Barton's very good at pointing out that, hey, you know, some of these founders actually freed slaves, remember? Some of them are pretty decent guys.
Well,
owned a slave in their life. Yeah.
It was a very hard thing to do to free slaves
during that period. And there were some folks who wanted a free slave, but, you know, I didn't realize
right.
it. But there was some serious, I'm just talking about Virginia. I don't know about the other one, but
yes.
there were some
no,
serious
you're correct. Yeah, you got the history right there. Yeah.
For being, for trying to free slaves, you were, I mean, there were some serious consequences for trying to do that. In fact, and then you were leaving them to fend for themselves, and everybody today said, talked about the founders and how terrible they were. Some of them grew up in families that had slaves and wanted to do something, but they were just left with very few options. There just wasn't any way to do it.
Yeah, at the time that Washington died, and he dies in 1799, he had the right to free his slaves. Okay, it's called manumission, and he put it in his will. And the law at the time was such that he could do that. He could do that in his will. By the time Jefferson dies in 1826, he requires the permission of the legislature. You had to go to the Virginia legislature, and only they could free a slave or manumit a slave. And so, yeah, they started putting more and more restrictions on what you could do to free slaves. Now, you could move with your slaves. They couldn't block that because there's the American Constitution, but very few people actually said, well, let me just move north with the slaves and that'll automatically free them. They did try and do it in wills, but the state started clamping down on it. I mean, it's a pretty nasty system. We have to face up to what it was, and it was getting worse. It was not getting better.
That's
okay?
the point.
It's getting worse.
That's the point. That's the point. This is of tantamount importance in my mind, as we go out, you know, from the Church of Liberty here, where we come twice a week to as folks say, preach to the choir. It is important for us not to leave here and go out into the world with any idea that we need to defend those parts of the founding that were somewhat dark, that, you know, they existed, embrace them. I'm not suggesting that you defend them. I'm suggesting that you acknowledge them. And, you know, I myself get kind of a smile on my face when I hear about a local high school down here that prohibited the wearing of the Confederate flag on a tribute shirt, or when I hear someone talk about the Confederate flag being a bad symbol because it flew over slavery. I mean, you want to find a flag that flew for 200 years more over slavery than the Confederate flag? My God, look at the Stars and Stripes.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of flags that have flown over slavery. You wouldn't be able to fly too many of them. You know, even some African flags that did. So, you know, it's not that. I mean, I will be sensitive to them. I mean, I tend to be Southern by root, and I've fallen into that, I'll say, trap myself, you know, where I still am proud of Robert E. Lee at times, and I like the guy. But, yeah, if you're going to get me to defend the secessionist, you know, slave cause, no. Kind of like Mark Twain. You know, I like to think I'd have ended up like Twain did. He was from Missouri. He enlisted in the Confederate Army. His brother came, it disbanded, and he realized, I'm out of here, okay? I'm heading for California. I'm heading for Points West.
I will take that whole discussion back to where Lloyd and I started, and that is this slavery or the emancipation of the suffrage for women. These are things that would have come. They would have come about with or without constitutional amendments, in a state by state by state basis, if we'd left state sovereignty alone, slavery was going to fall. Historically, it was dragging the southern states down. One or two or three states were going to give women suffrage to vote, and after that, the wall was going to come tumbling down. And it all boils down to 13, or at some point in our history, 28, or at some point in our history, 50, little laboratories of self-governing individuals trying out new things or leaning on tried and true things, but it all boils down to exactly what Lloyd is talking about, to exactly what Keith is talking about, to exactly the causes that both of these guys are championing, and that is putting this federal government back in its box and taking back the power to run this country as a cooperative of 50 states. Gentlemen, last word.
I think that's the basic problem to me is you've seen a centralization of power in the federal government. We need to turn it around and get more stuff done back in states. And then the trap sometimes is you know, be careful not to fall into secessionist arguments with that. Or, you know, states' rights arguments that were basically used to justify segregation even and stuff like that. Make sure that we are working through the majority of states and keeping it, you know, unified as opposed to breaking it apart. But that's my two cents. Yeah. And Madison, that is absolutely Madison. Madison would say amen to that.
I hate that. I would love to ask Lloyd if he heard last week. Let's talk about Jefferson Davis and what he said about the Convention of the States. Did you catch that, Lloyd?
No, I didn't. How fascinating. I know he was not a fan of nullification. He obviously did defend secession. He thought it was justified at times. You know,
In his memoirs, he regretted that in earlier and better times, when difficulties arose, a Convention of the States was not assembled. And I told Dave last week when I read that for the very first time, It just made me just emotionally it floored me, because what he was admitting, to me at least, it seems he was admitting that, you know, this didn't really have to happen. The framers gave us an answer. The framers gave us a solution, but it came. There was a convention of 1861 that was called by Virginia, and several states went. It wasn't really a convention of the states, and what they because not all the states were there, really, but they could have. I think they were probably invited, but it was too little too late, and they made a recommendation.
Yeah, it was too late.
They just didn't come around. They couldn't match. But that was powerful to me. What an admission of somebody of history in that regard to say, you know, maybe we could have done it a different way, you know.
No, I'm with you. Jefferson Davis has actually gotten a bum rap in history for obvious reasons. I mean, he's the one guy, if you quote poor old Jefferson Davis, you're in a lot of trouble, right? Because they'll crucify for that one. But he was an American hero in lots of ways. He ran the Mexican War. He was Secretary of War. He was a very competent man. He was in favor of union. He was in favor of compromise. He tried to do it. He tried to hold it together. He literally left. In fact, his farewell address from the Senate in 1861. He was senator from Mississippi. I mean, it is painful. It's tearful. He was applauded for it. He did what he thought he had to do. You have to put yourself in the point of view of the Southerners after the Dred Scott decision. And the Dred Scott decision, in my opinion, was the time bomb that just blew it all up. It's the Supreme Court's fault, and we don't blame them enough for this, okay? I don't know if Jeff Davis blames them in the memoirs, but I sure blame the Supreme Court for what blew the country apart. And here's the Supreme Court overstepping its bounds and basically denying the states' rights of northern states, frankly. They just slam-dunked it and said, we're almost going to have slavery everywhere. We're certainly not going to recognize the rights of Negroes anywhere in America, and we're also not going to let the federal government even prohibit slavery in the territories. So all the new states that come in are going to be slave states. How you like them apples? Well, you know the North isn't going to live with that. The free states are going to say, forget that. And Lincoln basically ran for office saying, I'm going to ignore the Dred Scott decision, okay, because it's wrong. And he's right. Lincoln's right about that. The Dred Scott decision is garbage, and he should ignore it. But
Lord,
now put yourself in a point of view of Jeff Davis. Jeff Davis has no choice either. Once Lincoln says he's going to ignore a Supreme Court decision, what's the South supposed to do? You know, they're thinking, well, now, you know, that's not really worth being in a union with somebody like that, you know, is it? And so the secessionists are going nuts at that point. They're saying, we might as well chuck this place because they're not even going to follow the rule of law. And you see what it did to the country. It just ripped. And Davis is right. He's looking for how could we have gotten around this problem. And maybe a convention of states could have done it. I think it's a brilliant insight on his point. Yeah, so I like it.
I was going to ask you,
Lord,
what books for folks who are really interested in maybe books you've had recently or obviously you're well-read, what books would you recommend to young people to maybe whet their appetite on some of the history that really is that you're keen on?
Let me give you a book. Let me give you a short list. That's an interesting question, and I will tell you I've read probably close to 100 books now on the Constitution. I mean, just tons of books. You're right, and they almost come together. One of the books that turned me around and made me recognize the problem, you know, has nothing to do with political parties, was Robert Bork's book, The Tempting of America, and it's subtitled The Seduction of the Law or something like that. That he has a brief history in there of the Supreme Court that's about 150 pages. It's in the first section of that book. It's brilliant. And you think it's all the liberals' fault. You won't think it's all the liberals' fault once you've read Robert Bork, okay? You're going to realize this is a long-term problem. The court has always been prone to exceeding its authority. It's happened several times. It's a tough problem to solve, and that really helped turn me around and wake me up. So I would say Robert Bork's book, and it's readable. I think it's not bad. Another good book is The Constitutional Thought of Thomas Jefferson. I think that's a good book. That showed me how radical Jefferson was, and he does talk about the Virginia and Kentucky resolutions in there, things like this. So obviously the Federalist Papers are a must-read. Democracy in America by Alexis de Tocqueville is probably a must-read for anyone who's serious about it. And the other book I would recommend is by Phyllis Schlafly called The Supremacists. And if you want to deal with the Supreme Court problem, she has a solution there in how you can restrict the jurisdiction of the courts that is absolutely spot-on correct, and we don't do it near enough, and Republicans need to really read that book, okay, and quit thinking about it. In some cases, here's the basic argument, and this is just rock solid. If the Constitution is the problem, so maybe the 16th Amendment's the problem, and we all say we want that amendment gone, then yes, fix the Constitution and amend it and get rid of that taxing power so that they don't have it anymore. However, if the Constitution is not the problem, if the Constitution is actually right and the Supreme Court got it wrong, such as Roe v. Wade, okay, then don't amend the Constitution. That's not where the problem is. The problem's in the court. You need to fire the judges or fix the judges, not fix the Constitution because the judges got it wrong. And that's
well, that
the
was
key
my next
insight.
Question. Yeah, that was my next question. Mark Levin in this book talks about possibly term limits for Supreme Court justices. After you look at this whole big picture, and you have a couple books there, obviously, that we need to read, but what would you recommend if we had the opportunity to refresh or reset the court? What would be the logical solution?
I've read Levin's book, so I'll start that, and I would recommend three of his amendments, and I kind of gave him a D grade overall because a lot of his amendments I didn't like, but three of them I liked. In the case of the term limits on judges, I don't even think we need an amendment there. I mean, my reading of the Constitution is that if Congress wants to limit the terms of judges, they can just do it. We don't. I don't know why we think the language in the Constitution.
It's
just
the federal.
The federal.
It's the Judiciary Act. It's the Judiciary Act itself that makes those terms lifelong.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what makes it a. What it says is that the judges shall hold their offices during good behavior. That's the phrase in the Constitution. The question is, what are their offices? Does it have to be for life?
Right.
I believe that the judges you've already appointed, you did appoint for life. You can't do much about those judges, okay? Those terms are for life, so you can't change those terms of office. But you could appoint a judge tomorrow and say, your term is 10 years, period. There's nothing he can do about that. That judge he got a term, you gave it to him. There's nothing in the Constitution that requires us to do it for life, so I wouldn't even amend it. I'd just start doing it. The reason we don't do it is because when the conservatives get in, they want their judges to be for life, too. Why would they make theirs 10 years? And when the liberals and Obama gets in, he sure isn't going to limit his, right? He's not going to limit his to 10 years.
Yeah,
so we need an amendment. Yeah, it's a political process that's actually broken there. But the Constitution itself, you don't technically need an amendment to do what you're advocating there. You can just do it. And frankly, you can start abolishing federal judges. You can start getting rid of them. Those offices are not guaranteed. So if you want to have half as many federal judges, go ahead. If you want to pack the Supreme Court and get rid of their bad rulings, do it. Don't waste time. Just say, we used to have 9 judges. We're going to have 20 now, okay? And I'm going to appoint them all. And guess what we're going to do? Get rid of all these crummy decisions, okay? If you really wanted to do it, and I realize this is radical talk. It's fairly loose, and the American people aren't ready for this. That's no doubt about it. But can you do it constitutionally? Absolutely you can. We've done it many times. Jefferson packed the court. Andrew Jackson packed the court. Lincoln packed the court. Grant packed the court, okay? And FDR tried, and then he didn't actually pack it, except that by the time he was done, he had appointed every single judge on that court. He was there for 16 years. He was there for 13. He died in office. But, he had plenty of time to change that court. He changed all the judges. So it's a gradual, if you will, transformation in the court because FDR had such control.
You're a Levin fan, Keith. Read Men in Black.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You mentioned you had 2 other amendments that you liked. His sunshine clause on federal agencies.
Let me look that. That one's not the other one that I'm thinking of, so let me see. You know what? Let me give you and the listeners out there, if they're interested, my email, okay? And then I will send you a little spreadsheet I have that summarizes all of them and my reaction to them and the grade that I gave it, okay? And then the 3 that I liked, let me summarize this myself here really quickly. One was a repeal amendment idea. I think that's number 8. Does that ring a bell with you?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's the number on it. Just a second, I'm bringing it up now. Yeah.
Was somewhat analogous, but not quite as good as
number
9. SRA.
He calls number 9. Levin calls grant the state's authority to directly amend the Constitution. Number 10, he calls grant the state's authority to check Congress. Number 10 is clearly the same. I mean, it's close to the repeal amendment. Okay, it is a repeal amendment, essentially. He's calling for 3/5 of state, the wrong formula, and he has a 2-year time limit. I don't want a time limit on it. But otherwise, is it the same idea? Of course
doesn't
it is.
He,
it's the same idea. Yeah.
He also has a dollar value there, doesn't he? I mean, it has to have some concrete.
Yeah, he does.
That's ridiculous.
The regulation has to be worth $100 million. I'm not interested in that dollar value either.
No, me
either. That's not. Yeah, I don't. Why are you putting that? He's thinking like a lawyer. You got to think like a Constitution person. You just need basic principles and basic checks and balances. So to me, I don't want any time limit, and I want a representative majority of states, which is a more complex idea. But it means a majority of states that represent a majority of the American people. I want that, formula to be able to repeal any federal law or regulation, no time limit. So this is essentially judicial review handed over to state legislatures. Do what you want with it. All right? You want to get rid of light bulb regulations? Do it. You want to get rid of Obamacare? Do it. You want to get rid of the Federal Reserve Act? Be my guest. Or gun laws or the NSA spying. I mean, whatever you want to get rid of. You don't like Bush's war in Iraq? Do it. Okay? Whatever the states, it's both a left and right thing, so I'm not trying to, I don't want to always make it sound like it's only a conservative thing to do. It's not. It's not. I mean, there's things that the left may use it to get rid of federal marijuana laws, for that matter. I don't know. You know, I mean, it's a transfer of power from the feds to the states. And I like Levin's Proposal 10. I think you got to improve it. What was the one you specifically asked me about? Give it back to me again.
A three-year sunset clause on all federal agencies. In other words, a perfect example, EPA, after 3 years, if the Congress doesn't renew them, they're dispatched. That became a favorite word of mine as I read that book, you are dispatched. But after all, we can't afford you anyway, so that's one way to hone down the government into a federal government we can actually afford is just simply dispatch those people who are not doing a good job and can't control their waste and abuse, obviously. So.
I gave him, I'll tell you, this is my bottom line. I gave him a D on that one. That's number six. It's called Limit the Federal Bureaucracy. Certainly a good idea to do it, okay? No one's in favor of an unlimited federal bureaucracy, me neither. But that, number six, I gave him a D because I don't think that an amendment is even necessary again. He has a super committee authorization in there. That's a terrible idea. The last thing I want is a super committee of Congress that can authorize this stuff. So get rid of that for sure. The real problem here, in my opinion, this gets a little bit deeper, and I think Levin is on to the problem. There clearly is an out-of-control federal judiciary. That's a fact. The presidency is out of control. And we see this with Bush and now clearly with Obama. It's very difficult to rein in these presidents. We saw it with Clinton. We saw it to a lesser degree with Nixon, and it keeps getting worse. So if I were going to propose an amendment, I would start changing the way we elect the president and try and break up the power of the president. You're on a very sensitive issue with the American people on this one. Most Americans think of politics only in terms of presidents. If you go talk to the average American, what do you think about politics? Who do you want for president? That's what they're going to ask you. Who'd you vote for president? So the whole country has been reduced to this once every 4 year emperor election. Who do we want to run the show? And I think that's part of the problem. What I would do is pass what's called the RAINS Act. I don't know if you ever heard of this. I think it's a great idea. This would gut the bureaucracy in one step. Congress should pass a law that basically restores what due process is really supposed to mean. And the law would read as follows. No person may be fined, punished, in any way penalized in the United States other than by a law enacted by Congress. Okay? I'm talking federal, federal law. Okay, so I just gutted the entire federal regulatory code because none of us have to obey it unless Congress approves it. It must be passed by them directly. What I've done is I forced the bureaucracy to come back to Congress and get all this stuff approved by them. Any court, any judge that enforced a bureaucratic rule on anybody, I'd fire. If it's not passed by Congress, you're fired, Your Honor, okay? This is what I would do. That's actually what the founders meant by due process of law. They meant that all laws have to go to the legislature, to the parliament, to the elected representatives of the people, and they must be approved by them specifically. Ever since the New Deal, we've gotten into this habit where Congress just says, hey, EPA, we hereby authorize you to make up the rules. That's a disaster, and we cannot accept that. I don't think it takes a constitutional amendment, frankly. I think it takes a judiciary that understands what due process of law means and get back to it. And so I would pass the RAINS Act. It's called the RAINS Act, R-E-I-N-S, Great idea. I wish Levin, and frankly, Levin got his $100 million threshold from the RAINS Act. He just didn't quote it. I have a few bones to pick with Levin. He puts a repeal amendment in there. He doesn't give Randy Barnett credit for that. Randy Barnett's what came up with the idea. That's where I found the language for it myself. I mean, there's some sloppiness in Levin that I don't want to. It's not necessarily. It's not fatal to him. It's not fatal, but I certainly don't respect his scholarship. I mean, he's a talk show host. Take it for what it's worth.
You got to give him a little bit of credit, though. You know, what's interesting is this is a more of a there's a word I can't find here, but it wasn't just Levin. I think Levin maybe is timely, but there was obviously some everywhere you look. There's another branch on this Article 5 tree that you never heard of. I mean, there's the Indiana state legislature is working. Senator Long is taking some leadership, and some different legislators or places you didn't have heard from before. There's Ferris and Meckler on Convention of the States. They decided to release do their website like 8 days after Levin. You know, they hadn't even talked to Mark Levin, even though supposedly he lives 8 miles away. He had never really sat down and talked to Mark Levin. And I talked to a guy in Wyoming. I think I told Dave this last Friday. He was in Jackson Hole, Wyoming paper. Here was this fella fighting for Article 5, and I asked him, you know, where did he get his information? It was something that some coalition you never heard of before, and we got him hooked up with the Convention of the States, but he was just out there on his own, had read the Constitution enough to say, you know, this has got some promise, and called a meeting, you know. I had to call him out of the blue and give him some encouragement.
So anyway, yeah.
I'm not sure. I really don't like people who knock Levin as a way, you know, who are such naysayers that they're just trying to stop the whole process. No. To me, Levin is a good starting point, and he has raised the right issues, and I applaud all that, and we need this discussion. Absolutely. Do not throw a wet blanket on that. Do not, however, think Levin is the last word. Levin is the starting point. He's not necessarily the ending point. I mean, the guys who first fired the shots at Lexington and Concord are not the same ones who wrote the Constitution, okay? They started the process. They are extremely important. Their courage in standing there on that green and taking those shots is critical, and they are to be applauded and remembered forever, but they're not necessarily the ones who can attend the Constitutional Convention and rewrite it for you. So you need both, and you need to continue the process. And I applaud Levin for what he did, and I certainly studied his book. And like I said, 3 of the 11 are very good ideas, and I agree with 3 of them, so that ain't bad, right? That'll get you in the Hall of Fame close. I mean, that's .290 batting average, something like that. So.
Okay. Listen, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. I'm going to hold on to these two guys. Keith Carmichael, the Missouri Coalition or Missouri Convention of the States Coalition Director, and Lloyd Sloan, Champion of the State Repeal Amendment. I've had both of them on for extended periods. If you caught those shows, maybe you've got some questions for either one or both of them. We're going to come back from this break. I'm only going to hold them for 3 or 4 or 5 minutes after the break because we want to get on with the rest of the show. So if you've got questions, if you've got concerns, if you've got comments, 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835.
We can talk about the micro story of Detroit, but it seems to me that Detroit, as always, is standing in for all kinds of things about America.
Right.
And in the case of Detroit, the reason that the tax base becomes so small is because of a loss of population, right? So folks move out, they're not there to pay the taxes on the homes, and the kind of deterioration is what you see in the numbers you've
You wrote the book with a movie in mind.
Can you talk if you haven't got a brain? Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
They told me that you had gone totally insane. And that your methods were unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
I don't see any methods.
Well, the method is what we're here for, folks. This is it. Methodology, and we're just starting the talk right now. The method is important. It was important in that movie, and by God, it's important now. It was important in 1776, and it's important in 2014. So method is where we're at. It's time to fix this, and we need a method, and we need a methodology to get that done, and we're here to do that. 347-677-1835. I've got Lloyd Sloan. He's been with us from the start here. He's been with me on and off for the last 2.5-3 years here talking about the state repeal amendment. We've got some movement on that. Thanks for joining us tonight, Lloyd. It's always great to hear from you. I'll want you back once in a while as things progress on this front, and we want to keep track of how things are going. We're definitely wanting to be involved. We're wanting to help you get the word out. We're wanting to get things done.
Nope. Appreciate you having me on, and always like the discussion and the opportunity to share these ideas. I think it's very exciting times.
Anytime, Lloyd. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
And we got Keith Carmichael. Keith, listen, I don't know if you followed it today, but there was a little bit more discussion going on about this thing from the naysayers today. I was forwarded or came across an article by a guy named Gary DeMar. I've never heard of him before. Short on sourcing, but long on opinion. He cites the four reasons why a constitutional convention is a bad idea. His first is, of course, that I've not got a lot of time left tonight, so I'm going to summarize this, and then we're going to talk about it for just a couple of minutes. His first reason is that the liberals pretty much control the entire world, and there's nothing we can do now to keep the liberals from ruling the world, so we should just do exactly what they say, and that is sit, stay, and beg. And there's just nobody left alive with enough smarts to fix this thing. His second is another worn out piece of progressively fueled agenda, and that is, hey, they don't follow the Constitution anyway. What makes us think that if we passed an amendment or two that they'd follow the Constitution any better than they do now? The third was, of course, is a flat-out lie, and that is and another lie promoted and fueled by progressives, and that is that the whole Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia was a coup d'etat. These guys went up there and with a single mission to amend the Articles of Confederation, that they locked themselves in some secret Masonic closet somewhere and came out with this coup d'etat to take over the country. And then his fourth is kind of funny, and that is, yeah, things are bad, but they could get worse. Basically, it's the and what he says is the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. So we might as well live with Satan as to even invite his brother into the room. You and I dealt with these just briefly in your last session. But what my intention is with good historical source material in hand, not next week or not tomorrow night, because I've already got tomorrow night planned, but starting next week, to do an entire show on each one of these four things. So I invite you along for that if you're interested in coming along. Sure. I want to take each one of these 4 points, because each one of these 4 points has more than adequate historical and logical refutation. And the reason I want to spend so much time on this is because these listeners here, this is the kind of war they're going to be fighting in the streets as they take this gospel out there onto
exactly
the streets
right.
of America. And so I think it behooves us really to spend probably an hour a show for 4 different shows on each one of these points, because this is the kind of it really is. It's just the kind of stuff that's been spewed out for the last couple of years, and it's back rearing its ugly head again.
You're exactly
so,
right, Dave. You know, well, you're exactly right. You know, I listened this evening. Senator Long from Indiana was on the Glenn Beck show today. And he did a great job. You can go on glennbeck.com and you can see and you can listen to that. And he outlines what they've done in Indiana. But towards the end, Glenn Beck asked him, you know, if you're listening today, what can you do? And if you're listening tonight, what you can do is you can go to conventionofthestates.com and you can get on the Action Center and you can actually build a profile and communicate with folks in your state. Now, Senator Long he wasn't aware of that, so he said you can just go out and he suggested that you advocate that this process is going to work, and I really disagree with him. The first thing before you go out and advocate anything is you need to do some research. You need to do exactly what David said, and that's you need to read some original sources. You need to go online with Robert Nagelson and do some research and read you know, some of the papers have been written in this last phase or the last phase of writing about this issue. You know, I really feel for some of these folks, including the gentleman that you mentioned tonight. They're not really up on anything, and they're regurgitating what they've heard for so long, and they're trying to hold the company line. But you really can learn a lot more by what the leaders are not saying anymore. They're not saying it's a constitutional convention. They know better. And they're going out of the way now not to malign the Constitution of the United States, which people have been doing for 3 decades at least, based on this fallacy that you mentioned of the 1787 convention being a runaway. So if he wants to get up with his own organization, he needs to stop doing those things, because they're already beginning to understand that history is not on their side, and they're going to have to do a little homework of their own. And if they want to continue to dishonor the founders by not using the process that they left in the Constitution, then that's their own decision. All I ask is if you really care about the Constitution, if you really want to honor the founders, if you're not ready to embrace the core mechanism by which they left us to balance power between the states and the federal government, at least you'll honor them enough by not fighting against those folks who choose to do so.
Exactly. And so you and I will get together on the phone and in the emails, and we'll set some times. I really do want to I really do want to bring the sources. I really do want to have an open discussion. I really do want to open the phone lines to those for and against. I really want to have a honest, sourced debate, or at least presentation on these four points, each in their own right. And so if we have to skip a week because you have a commitment, I would really like to have you along for that, and we'll get that done, if that's all right with you.
You bet. Yeah, I look forward to visiting with Lloyd again. Lloyd, that was a great program this evening, and appreciate you guys putting that together. It's great.
No worries. Thank you for coming. I appreciate hearing from you. Anytime you call in and chat with us any night. Thanks, Keith.
Yep, come back.
Good night. Okay, we're down to the wire, folks. I had promised you a show tonight on state sovereignty, and particularly what I wanted to do was go back to where state sovereignty comes from. It's not some of this, and you know, I coined this term from a one-on-one discussion I had with Lloyd offline one day. You know, this country isn't ruled 'cause the Bible told me so. And it isn't ruled each man to his own law. It has to be ruled. I mean, it anarchy isn't an answer. I have this right because I said so, and you don't have this, you know, I don't have a right. And I had this very discussion with a guy. I tried to anyway, have this very discussion with a guy this week who just didn't get it. I don't have the right, and should I or should I not have the right to put Claymore mines in my front yard to protect my life, liberty, and family, and keep the neighborhood kids from picking my daisies? Well, who the hell says so? You know, if not, who says so? Who gets to say? I can't sit in my front yard naked as the kids come by for school on Monday morning. Who gets to say? The fact of the matter is that someone gets to say. My neighbors don't get together and lynch me. So it's not them and them alone who get to say. You know, my next door neighbor doesn't get to shoot me because I sit in my front yard naked. So it's not him and him alone who gets to say. And I don't get to sit in my front yard naked just because I say. And so what we end up with is a level that was decided on after years, really, of trial. I mean, you know, the Articles of Confederation was a trial. The whole Commonwealth system that occurred before the Articles of Confederation was a step of the experiment. The Greek states, for that matter, were part of the great experiment that culminated for us, and we can't say culminated for mankind because we don't know what things are going to look like in 1,000 years. Maybe someone will come up with something better. But to this point, which culminated in the best thing that's ever occurred, and that is a cooperative of 50 independent and sovereign states using a federal government for things that are limited, things that are well-defined, but clearly things that can't be done individually by 50 states if they're going to coexist on the same planet. Let alone on the same little piece of real estate, bound on two sides by water. We're going to get into that tomorrow. I'm totally out of time tonight. I don't begrudge myself that at all. This was a great night, a great discussion with Lloyd. Keith joined in, and that kind of extended it, and I'm happy for that. I think it was absolutely fantastic. I want anyone and everyone who got in late to go back and listen to the thing. But we're going to wrap up for tonight, and we're going to get right on that tomorrow night, that whole state sovereignty. Where does it originate? And I will catch you on that side of the sunrise. God bless us. Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.